In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of Wilderness Thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back to rewind this episode of Survivor 50, episode 10. And talk about it in the past with our outwit, outplay, and outlast moments. John, there's been so much positivity around this episode. Does it continue with the rewind?
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. This was no question the best episode of the season, if not the last 10 seasons. Sorry, Tegwith. I know you went on. I know Tegwith posted on TikTok and Instagram today saying that the double duo twist was a better episode. It wasn't. This episode had everything I want from Survivor, and it had a twist that didn't really amount to anything. Maybe a little bit, it changed things, but no, this was unbridled, fantastic Survivor. Just based on what survivors have said about this episode, like people who've been on the show, this is the closest the show has ever come to truly showing the type of chaos that happens leading up to a vote. Mm-hmm. It was entertaining in all facets of the episode, every single moment of this two-hour episode. Nothing felt long. The auction was back to normal. Wasn't that so nice? Not fearing someone losing their vote or wasting time with people scrambling through the jungle to get money. Mr. Beast was, like, barely in the episode. I honestly don't have anything bad to say about this episode. It was so, so, so good. And it honestly just felt like, oh, yes, this is Survivor.
Mm-hmm. As I'm assuming the channel's resident Mr. Beast specialist, as I've seen both seasons of Beast Games and have watched his videos and things like that, this twist was a very Mr. Beast twist, but it didn't feel too outlandish like Jimmy Fallon's, where you know, Christian had to vote for himself because we had the do or die. And I think there's a rooted in Survivor nature of this twist. Now, did we like the do or die? No, but it was a Survivor created twist and not something that, all right, yeah, Survivor probably created the twist for Jimmy Fallon too, but because his name was attached to it, it makes it be like, all right, why are we having these, you know, celebrities ruin our Survivor? But because we had do or die, this coin, it really felt like a mixture of Beast Games and Survivor. Like, I watched the Beast Games episode crossover with Survivor, and that was really Survivor heavy. Into Beast Games. Well, this had that Beast Games element of the coin flip, because that happened season one, where it was this person could double the prize money or be out of the game completely.
I agree.
That mix up of everything that I think really worked for it, and that Mr. Beast wasn't a a real big character too. And you could, I feel like you could just sense that he was a fan or is a fan of Survivor because he wasn't like, he felt nervous. He is this larger than life, screams every set of dialogue that he has. And he felt nervous to be around this set and to be on like a show that he loves. Cause I would be too, if I was coming out like that and being like, all right, time to do my thing. Like, I'm not going to come out being like, what's up, everybody?
Mm-hmm. I think if you saw, I don't know if you saw his tweet that he put out on Thursday morning. Maybe it was from Wednesday night. But anyways, he essentially said, I'm not coming on the show to be like the star of the show. Mm-hmm. Like, this is for the players, which is why I like didn't say a lot. And it almost felt like Jeff wanted him to say more. There might have been more said, but it really did feel like he was leaving room for the players to still be the game. Despite the fact that he has this twist coming on there that is like a very Mr. Beast twist, it felt like Survivor still. And honestly, this twist is better than Do or Die. I'll say it. The Do or Die sucks. Like, you're punishing someone because they came last in the immunity challenge. That's terrible. This twist, we take out the vote aspect of Survivor, which sucks, but we kind of still have a vote because you're, like, trying to determine who's going to do this, right? And you have to make this unanimous decision. Like, would it have been better for them to go up and vote no matter what for a coin flip rather than the threat of rocks? Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure. That would be way better because, whew, if, like, this went to rocks, Suri drew it, and then gets kicked out of the game, like, the internet would no longer work. But...
Yeah.
But, and, like, there's like, because...
Also... Sorry, continue.
I was just going to say that because you have someone volunteering, which, again, like Jeff said, that he didn't think someone would do that so quickly. But you know what? It works, right? Like, this isn't the most egregious twist we've seen in Survivor. It's not even the most egregious twist we've seen in Survivor this season. Like, it works. And, like, I think, like, St. Kilflo says here, right? Like, the twist, not my jam, and that's totally... that's.
Yeah, fine. Like, the Do or Die, like, also not my jam.
I would also rather not have not this my jam. But Mr. Beast was class and tasteful in his presence, right? Like, he came out and he respected the show. And I think that's mm-hmm. all we could have possibly have asked for the most popular, like, just said, like, the most recognized person in the world.
And I think also it does provide an element of strategy where Devin's is like, I'm on the bottom. I'm probably going home if we vote. Why don't I go out via coin flip? You guys want me to get an idol and stay around?
Yes, you, okay.
Someone else want to flip? Like, it could be like a front of like, oh, nobody wants to go. I'll do it and mm-hmm. see what happens, the inner workings between them. And like, if they did go to a vote here to vote someone for the coin flip, do they vote for Devin's? Or is there a group of them that's just like, Stephanie, go vote, you know?
I think or one
go,
of the big-
go flip.
I think one of the big things with this is, first off, it's being framed as a Beware advantage, and it's not. It's like a super shot in the dark, essentially.
I guess
the Beware advantage aspect of it is because it's forced upon everyone.
Yeah.
But it is a better shot in the dark, right? You have a 50-50
Devin's
chance.
Rather than a 50-50 one versus 1-6.
Much better. And it's so important that Jimmy's doubling the prize pool, right? Mm-hmm. And moving it to $2 million, because otherwise, if that promise of $2 million is there, you never let Devin's do this.
Yeah.
Right? But it's because the promise of $2 million is there. I actually think it's really well thought out, because having that prospect of it, yes, this could be bad for us if the person on the bottom gets immunity and an immunity idol. But now we're playing for $2 million instead of $1 million. And that's huge. That is so big. I was already surprised that this season didn't have a $2 million prize to start with. Now I know why. It's because mm-hmm. Mr. Beast was like, I'm putting $1 million up for this. Like,
I'm just upset that your pregame prediction of Mr. Beast bringing out the car curse again wasn't
I wish it had happened. Imagine if he had gotten a car.
A car and a margarita bring the old car curse and the new era margarita curse.
We didn't have a margarita at the auction, McKenna. We don't even get a margarita curse.
There was no alcohol because I think they go right into the challenge.
Oh, probably. That's probably a good point.
But all right. So our outwit, we're kind of dancing around it here by talking about this tribal council so much, is nothing left to lose. Devin's flips this coin because he has nothing left to lose. What could go bad with him flipping the coin? He gets voted out. He gets voted out anyway. So I'm going to stir up as much trouble during this tribal council to try and gain allies or get people just to not vote for me. And I'm going to talk about what happened here, going to spill this tea, going to talk about, you know, this plan that I heard. And then Jonathan is like, all right, why are you trusting Devins? He just lied about this idol. And then Stephanie tries to say something. And then Aubrey's like, whoa, hold on a second. And so now Aubrey adds fuel to this fire because people trust Aubrey. Aubrey has told people the truth. So now that she's backing up Devins' claims.
Huge. It's huge. And I think it's really important to look at the theater that Devins presents in Tribal Council. Because that's ultimately what we are going to be talking about here. It's kind of like the theater of Tribal Council and how you can get there. We have some people who can be theatrical at Tribal Council. Like Rizzo can be theatrical at Tribal Council. But no one can really do it like Rick Devins. We saw it in Edge of Extinction with the pilots and passengers speech at Tribal Council. That was a huge moment that Devins actually changed the vote. No one going into that was intending to vote for Julia Carter. But that's what happens. And that's exciting. That is what Devins brings to a season. That and going into this, it bears contention amongst people. As I mean, even Phil kind of disagrees and says, I don't think Devins was going here. I don't think Devins winning immunity prevented him from leaving. I think the vote had landed on Stephanie. I don't know if that's 100% true.
There's still a possibility. Like, there's more of a possibility of him going home if there was a vote than there was, you know, with this coin flip. Like, he has more of a possibility to go home if there was just a vote.
Yeah, and Turkestine mentions here that Aubrey did mention the idea of getting someone with an idol. That is what we were showed in the episode to Jonathan. She brings that to Jonathan, and then obviously she's implying Ozzy there. And Devins is able to turn it on Stephanie because in Devins, he was approached by Jonathan and Stephanie about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he's not even lying in that situation because that's what he's seen. He just doesn't know that Aubrey's there, and Jonathan and Stephanie aren't in a position where they can articulate the fact that Aubrey is the person who first suggested going after Ozzy.
I think Jonathan just wanted to just, like, I'm going to let other people deal with this tribal council and hope that this doesn't blow back on me. He, like, said his...
Oh, no. McKenna's frozen. McKenna, what were you saying? He said his what?
Like, I'm...
Oh, okay. McKenna's gone. I'm going to just keep going on here. I agree. Like, Jonathan made this smart move of sitting back and just waiting this out. Honestly, I'm kind of getting tired of having to commend Jonathan for his play on this season because it's actually quite good. Like, he's shown a lot of awareness so far in the game. And we really see it in this tribal council where he just sits back and doesn't stir the boat anymore because there's so much going on. And this is the power that Devins brings to a tribal council, right? We've seen this type of performance before in other seasons. The first one we're going to talk about, I think, is one of the most over-the-top performances that we don't really need. That doesn't really amount to anything because I think they started targeting the wrong person. But it's the three amigos in Caravan. Be back, McKenna? No? I'll keep talking. So in that tribal council, this is the tribal council where Malcolm's decided, like, it's finally time to break up South Arras. McKenna's back. Okay, McKenna.
My internet is on the struggle bus today.
So good. It's not a specialist podcast if everyone's internet's working properly.
It has. It's been fine earlier podcasts, but today? No. Yes, the three amigos going after Philip here in that tribal council where they see him as the...
Yeah. So Philip is the easiest one for them to get to stealth arrest to flip on here. And because of that, they say, hey, we're going to put our votes on Philip in this tribal council. It's a fun tribal council because there is that performance and theater to it, right? Reynolds and Eddie and Malcolm really play this up. Obviously, Reynolds has the immunity necklace, so he can't get it. Or can't get votes. There's the plan by the majority alliance to split these votes onto. Are you back?
There's two of me.
There's two of you. I got rid of one of you, so it's fine. I think McKenna is actually back this time. Reynolds can't get the votes because he has the immunity necklace. He has an idol. Malcolm has an idol. They play it on Malcolm and Eddie so that it just makes it so that the three amigos can decide who's going home, and it still forces Stealth or us to split the votes. I think McKenna's frozen again. This is fun. But this is it's fascinating because you get into this moment where they have so much control. They can decide who goes home, and they go after this obvious boot who they probably could have kept around longer and getting out one of the bigger targets from the Stealth or us alliance, right? Like, that alliance was super strong. Cochran's obviously running the show at this point. You have Dawn in there, like, lockstep with Cochran. Breaking up that duo probably would have been really good. Sherry's flipped over to it at this point. Eric's around. Not really part of that alliance, but he's around. Brenda's there, who's a very strong player. And you have, it's just me. McKenna's, like, gone now. I'm sure she'll be back. And they decide to go after Philip. And sure, you could see Philip as kind of like, oh, I guess Andrea's still there too. You could get rid of Philip in this position because he seems to be the one who's really like dragging things out and keeping this group together, making them so they work together and keeping, as the figurehead of Stealth or Us, kind of keeping that alliance together. Maybe it's just because they thought, hey, we could get you out of here to just open things up a little bit. Maybe it's because it's just like this, the idea of voting for Philip in this situation doesn't really make a lot of sense, because in doing so, you're essentially like pushing the Philip means that you think that there's some way you can convince some of these people to vote with you and not have to use your idols, but they still use both idols. So it is this theater. It is this performance. It's a very fun tribal council. Honestly, if you haven't gone back and watched the post-merge of Caramon, it's well worth a watch. So it's fun. And like St. Clippo says here, Malcolm has said in the aftermath, putting Philip's name out there was a mistake. However, more because it didn't let the other side show their cracks, right? And that's exactly right. I 100% agree with you there, St. Clippo. McKenna, are you actually back?
Who the hell knows? I all just right, restarted my
computer. Yeah. And nobody, you're right, Turkenstein. Nobody cared for Philip, which is why Philip was the easy one to go. But as St. Clifford was saying, because they put out the name of, hey, we're putting our votes on Philip, it gave the other side this option being like, yeah, okay, we don't like Philip anyways. That's fine. And it didn't let them kind of expose themselves. It didn't go as far as Devon's went this week in 50.
I'm just going to agree with whatever you got going on, John.
I've just been talking about this three of me. You know what? I get a filibuster about Caramon. We both know I'm higher on Caramon than you are anyways, so it's fine.
Thanks, St. Clifo.
Oh, and then she freezes as she breaks up the comment from St. Clifo saying that none of her screen freezes have been embarrassing. Well, sorry, McKenna. That's how it goes. Another instance of this, okay, I had mentioned the pilots and passengers. I'm going to just kind of filibuster here while hopefully McKenna comes back. But the pilots and passengers is another one of those instances where Rick Devons really puts on that performance, right? Like, he gives the pilots and passengers speech. He's playing from the bottom. He is playing from a position where he can't really get into the game. He's been voted out of the game already, come back. He's kind of just playing as if he has nothing to lose. And that is really what we're looking at here, because that is what he did this week in 50. And he throws out this analogy of the pilots and the passengers and how that is how people need to be looking at the game, because people aren't paying attention to who can actually win the game. And I think that's kind of where he's going with in 50 with this tribal council. He's at a point where he's really trying to push this idea that he's pushing this idea that he's this free agent. There's no reason of getting him out because he's on the bottom. Use him against someone else. And it is really impressive. I have a lot of respect for the way Devons plays this game because he knows how to do it. I think McKenna's back. We're going to see. We'll see how it goes. McKenna, you are on your phone now?
Yes, I am.
We're improvising here. McKenna, let's get into our second example, though, for us.
Great.
Let's transition here. Take us through arguably one of the most exciting tribal councils in Survivor history.
Yeah, we're going to go into Russell Feathers. Hayden Moss is just a genius this episode. So that's why we decided to watch it over on the Patreon. So please watch that so you can listen to us tomorrow. But he just does the same kind of things that like Tiffany was doing a little bit, Defens was doing a little bit of just like twisting people's words, needling things, trying to create plans to stir up the power dynamics of this, you know, group of people. And he's on the bottom. Defens is on the bottom. Hayden is on the bottom. And they just want to try and make a move to better themselves in the game.
Yeah, exactly. I think what Hayden does so spectacularly, I think it really shows in this episode that Hayden won Big Brother for a reason, because he's able to look at these social dynamics and really articulate the fact that, hey, only one person can win this game. That is the big thing that he is focusing on in this entire build up to this tribal council and throughout this tribal council. He's focusing on the fact, hey guys, Tyson's playing a winning game. You need to figure this out. Like, he's going to win. Yeah. I hope you like second place. And he phrases it that way to make people think, oh, I'm not playing second place. Beginning of that episode, Jervis talks about, no, Tyson's my puppet, which obviously, like, what a response from Jervis in that moment. But then you get into this tribal council, and the whole point is, Sierra, you're on the bottom of this alliance. Jervis took the other two for Roy. You were the one not taken. Jervis just counted out everyone, and you were four.
Yeah, the fact that the way Jervis was sitting and, like, the way they were organized was so beautiful that Jervis was able to go 1, 2, 3, 4 and talk about Sierra as four. And Hayden was like, light bulb. I'm going to twist this to how I need it to be talked about to try and get Sierra to make sure she still votes the way I need her to.
Exactly. And you know, there is a bit of production aspect to that, right? Where you have production puts people in tribal council in a way to make it look interesting. So they tend to put sides on, like, opposite sides of each other. And because they put Jervis on that side and Sierra in the middle, because the question is Sierra going to flip here? It kind of just worked out that Jervis decided to count and start with himself.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a beautiful tribal council for all involved, except for Katie. And it leads to going to rocks. So essentially this going out on chance moment that we also have in this episode of 50, while it's not a, you know, 50-50 shot, it's a 1 out of 3, 4.
Yeah, there were only three people who pulled rocks.
So it's not much. It's a little worse. Defens had it a little bit better here in 50, but there's still that chance that they, you know, risked to go to rocks here, where you could be going home, but it's at for Hayden, I'm going home anyway. Let's go to rocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's really what shows the masterfulness of what Hayden did. Hayden actually did this in a position to be safe. He was getting the votes no matter what. So flipping Sierra over to his side to pull rocks was so good for him. He doesn't have to pull a rock in that situation.
Yeah, the other side of, like, Jervis, Tyson, Monica are like, you at least had two more votes before you were even a dream of going home. Like, now you could be out this tribal council. So, like, your odds just got worse here, Sierra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is one of those things where you have to weigh it out and you have to hope that it flips. But because the immunity fell on Jervis, it's actually so wrong for Sierra to go to rocks here.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that that person, it would have been going, so Tyson going to redemption, Tyson's just going to come back from redemption and gun for you.
Yeah, it's just... I think that's really important to mention is, like, this is a final six compared to the final 10 that we see in 50. And the differences of when those are happening are so important. I also think, Tommy Smokes tweeted this, that the timing of this Mr. Beast twist was actually perfect in 50, because giving someone immunity and an immunity idol any later in the game is too strong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's too strong if we're too close to the point where immunity idols expire. Any sooner in the game, and it's too weak, because you're just going to put a target on them for having an immunity idol. Here,
yeah.
It's one of those instances of like, okay, we have to play around this idol, but we could still potentially use it to our advantage. And I think mm-hmm. that's super important. Whereas in Blood versus Water, doing this at six, again, Hayden, masterful here. Turkenstein says that Sierra should have flipped the tribal before, because that was the time where they could actually gain the numbers to get these three out of the game. But I think, like, it's just this idea that timing is so important. Aubrey says it today, or this week, on Survivor 50, right? It's about the timing of your moves, right? Michelle wins the game because she makes big moves at the end of the game that she needed to do to make the game, or to win the game. This is one of those moments where it's like, is this timing correct? For Hayden, it's absolutely correct. For Sierra, it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Another big moment of this episode is the auction. And so that's what we decided to do for our outplay this week. But we have talked auctions before. We are talking specifically love in auctions, because that led to some interesting moments, I think, in 50, where we get, in my head, I related the Devin's walking on the beach loved one letter reaction to Chris's letter to himself alone on the rock. Like, I was like, these shots feel parallel to each other. Devin's winner edit, question mark?
Well, I just want to bring up this comment by St. Cliffo. Some people seem down on the auction, but I love auction, but I love this one. McKenna, what were your opinions of this auction? It's the first auction we've seen like this since, well, in 20 seasons.
I think this was a good start to bringing back the auction of like old era, I guess, with mm-hmm. some new era twists.
Yeah.
Where there nobody's losing a vote. They don't have, like you said before, that scramble for money. They each get their own amount, and there was no real advantages. Like, there was the Mr. Beast beware, but the fact that Jeff prefaced everything, like, it comes with comfort and it comes with chaos. So you don't know which you're going to get. You don't know if it comes with both. You're just going to bid and hope you get it. I don't necessarily like that he doubled the beware with the family letters. It was the same thing how I felt in, like, in AU this season, where Brooke kind of manipulated the family. There was a gift from home in one of the boxes where she had to lie.
Yeah.
And it just felt a little weird. So adding this beware, what if, like, Devin's didn't buy the family letters? Is he entered in the beware?
There are a lot of questions about it. I think what it comes down to is they were given money to share.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were allowed to share money if necessary.
Yes.
Which essentially guarantees that everyone will, and they set the flat price at $20. Everyone was going to have $20 at this point of the auction.
But that gives you the clue, like people were talking about in the stands, of like, these are probably loved one letters. We all need to go in on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to have, like, the mandatory beast at the end of it, like, I get it. You preface the entire auction, there could be chaos. But, like, I'd like to know if there was chaos with my comfort.
Based on what we saw, we only saw two instances of chaos beforehand. Both were, like, entertaining. Seeing Aubrey run around with grubs and just, like, chow them down incredibly fast. And also brings
in the bugging out challenge into season 50 as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We get a sea slug again.
Angela, season 36. Where you at?
Yeah. I think that was the worst deal. Like, Jonathan having to eat that sea slug and then not getting any of that chicken sword. Whatsoever.
Yeah.
That kind of sucked. But I also think, had Jeff said, hey, even like before they accepted paying $20 for their loved ones, there's like, hey, this is Mr. Beast. This thing's going to happen. I still think everyone's paying that $20 anyways to get their loved one letter. I think it was the safest thing. It always feels
weird when something is attached to love.
100%. I agree. But, I mean, the Mr. Beast of it all was happening anyways.
Yeah.
So, and I do think, like, attaching it to the loved ones' letters is the way to do it. And I do like fully believe if you had said, hey, there's this Mr. Beast thing, it's going to come into play at Tribal Council, everyone's still buying their loved ones' letters. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they did, because the loved one letters segment in this episode was maybe one of the best ones we've had
in a little bit, because it's at camp. Like, everyone has them. It's at camp. Like, I feel like the sanctuary loved one letters don't really hit as much as, like, something, like, with a different reward where they get loved one letter. I don't know. Just because the sanctuary is so overplayed that it doesn't feel right anymore.
I feel like part of it comes down to this idea. The loved one letters, I do think, is very telling a lot of the times in the edit. And I mean, I even texted you and the rest of the specialists after this segment. I'm like, oh, there are like legitimately four people who can win this game now after this segment. Mm. Based on like the way, like you said, like the Devon's winner edit aspect of it. I think Aubrey had like a winner confessional in that segment. Mm-hmm. I think that, I think Sari and like the moment, like her saying that her dad never wrote her a letter before and getting that, and like the moment of realization that like this is the third time Sari's received loved one letters on Survivor.
Yeah.
Right? Like, or has gone long enough in the game to potentially receive loved one letters. And that's a big moment, right? And it, like seeing these moments, seeing this again, big emotional moment for Sari. I mean, makes me really worried, but like I think these are the type of people who can still win the game now. Even Ozzy, right? Like with Ozzy's loved one letter, I think it was a little bit more in depth than the one that like Joe got beforehand. And like those four are kind of my front runners to win the game now because of this episode.
Yeah. And so we see in an episode of Guatemala that they are pooling money for these loved ones. Mm-hmm. Jeff brings out loved ones, and then it's like, but now bet on these actual people. And so you're allowed to pool your money, and so people are giving other people their money, and that's just an interesting tell of who is giving who money to buy their loved one. Stephanie actually winds up getting their loved one, and then chooses Cindy and Judd to enjoy their loved one with her. But it's crazy that Jeff was like, I'm gonna bring out these people.
I mean, they're people. Like it's wild, and it is one of those things where it's like, you can, I think we have this, there's conversation happening in the chat right now just about like, is it really like 19 days into the game, like do you really need a loved one's letter? I think there are some people who don't, but I think there are a lot of people who still benefit from it, right? And I think like a loved one, and I know we're on season 50. I'm still holding out hope that we have a loved one's visit in the next three episodes. I don't know if it's actually going to happen or not, but like, there's a little bit of hope in me still. But
we would have had a preview if it was next episode.
True. I actually think it might be in the finale that it happens, like a la Cagayan, where it's like they're watching the immunity challenge and stuff.
Oh.
But I think this is one of those things where it's like, this isn't just, there's a different attachment to love in the game of Survivor when you're completely isolated from everyone, right? Mm-hmm. I think when you're completely isolated from all the people you know, like, yeah, okay, I can pick up my phone and call my sister now. She's in a different state at the moment than me, but I could call her and talk to her right now, anytime. Right? Like, mm-hmm. we text each other every single day. I get a loved one letter from her. Yeah, it's going to be pretty impactful. And, like, knowing that, it could be, like, my sister's my inspiration. Like, getting a letter from her could be enough to push me through the end of the game. Even though, like, I probably have the conviction myself to get through the end of the game. So it would give me more. Like, I do think these type of things are important. And, like, Guatemala is so fascinating because they essentially have to decide which of the remaining players get to see their loved ones. It's one of the, aside from the Karamoan loved one visit, might be the cruelest loved one visit we have in the entire
game. Yeah, because it's like, well, I don't have enough money now to buy my loved one. Do I give my money to someone else so they can buy their loved one? Or do I pool in hopes that they take me?
Yeah. Right?
Like, that's just so brutal.
Yeah, it's very tough. And it's interesting because, like, in this auction, you have Judd winning, taking Stephanie and Cindy him.
Yes.
Right? It's also the episode Judd gets voted out. But it's one of those things that, I don't know. This would be hard for me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and again, like, this conversation is still happening in the chat, and Harrison Wells is asking, would it be strategic to deny people's loved ones letters? All these people who play for their children or their dying grandma, sad story. What if they don't give them that motivation? They have that motivation already. I think what it comes down to is, like, this is actually like a make or break moment in Survivor. If you deny people's love, it can turn people against you. We saw it. I spoke about the Caramoan loved one visit, right? Like, that was enough for Dawn to flip on Brenda. Even though, like, Brenda was put into a situation where she had to do what she did, Dawn couldn't forgive her for it.
I mean, the next thing that we're going to talk about is obviously the Mike Holloway moment that breaks the auction, where he doesn't deny people love, but he denies anybody who wants to go for an advantage love, because he's going to skip out on the loved one letters. So he has $20 more than everybody else. And then everyone's like, hey, whoa, I'm going to give my letter back now. And Mike is like, I'm sorry, that was dumb. And that really just sank him. And it's like, if you're denying these people their loved one letters, they're going to really gun for you.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things, like, you don't mess around with love. Like, it's just one of those, it's a taboo thing in Survivor. And I mean, there are comments going on here where, in the chat, where people were saying this was Mike Holloway's worst move in the entire game. And it was. It put him into a position that's arguably worse than the position Devins is in 50. Right? Like, yes. Devins at least is, like, a big enough target that someone, like, Phil said it on the recap on Wednesday. Saria has put herself into a position where she has Devins as a shield for her. And that's huge, right? Someone like Devins has that thing. Whereas Mike Holloway, by not going for that and trying to play for an advantage, which ended up being the extra vote, that
just, like, torpedoed him.
Torpedoed his game. He was into a position where he had to have an immunity idol or win immunity for the rest of the game in order to win that game. One false move and he's gone.
Yeah. And if he just didn't do that with a loved one letter, everything would have been different for him. Granted, now he won, so obviously, you know,
we can't take the confirmation bias into it, though, right? Like,
yeah,
that's just results based.
His whole game would have been different. He would have been playing with allies. He would have been able to maneuver strategically, but because he was like, "I'm going to be sly and sneaky around love," out, gotta go, shady moves.
I think it's a really tough one there to do. I think it kind of falls into the honor integrity thing of it all, where it's like there's this agreement to all go for love here.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do it. And there were people who were trying to prevent Mike from getting this, like, they held out and they didn't get anything else at the auction so that Mike could, or so that they could prevent Mike from getting an advantage potentially. And then Mike tried to scum them. And it was such a bad move. But I also, like, reflecting on the Survivor 50 auction, that's also one of the best parts. There were no advantages in this auction whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, we haven't had bidding on advantages much in the new era. I'd be lying if I said I could remember every single thing that was bid on in the new era since the auction was reintroduced in season 45. But however, this is one of those things where it's like, we've been saying, McKenna, you and I have been saying for years, this is how you fix it, right? Like, you just don't put any advantage in the game, in the auction, and you, like, make that clear to them right away. And all of a sudden, you have people bidding. It's
still entertaining because now you have Aubrey running around with a grub in her mouth. Like, that's
more than that. We had people actually bidding. People bid on items in this auction. There was an actual auction.
Is running around with a toothbrush, toothpaste, and a blanket. Like, top tier.
It was great. It was so much fun. And it really did harken back onto, I think, what the spirit of the auction was in the first place, right? The auction feels
like it's a taste of home.
To give that, yes, the mac and cheese.
Yeah, true. And like even in with that mac and cheese moment, it's a moment of reflection on love where like we see Aubrey as this game bot, and now she's a little bit softer and able to like have these emotions throughout the game, and she's not used to that. So that's a different side of Aubrey that we saw through mac and cheese.
Yeah, right. And it is so nice to get that. It's so nice to get these moments. And like, this is the type of thing that the auction should elicit. The auction shouldn't be this thing where people are scared of losing their votes, where people are scared that someone's going to get an advantage that will like beat them. It was kind of fine when like, you know, it's fine if an advantage is like hidden in something, right? Like we saw that in 47 where Rachel had the idol clue hidden in her fries, right? Yeah. That's fine. I'm fine with that. It's when there's an auction like blatantly out or an advantage blatantly out there. That's when things get sketchy.
So now we're going to transition into our last moment of the week. And we are going to talk about your vote out doomsday of it all, where Tiffany was like, I just want to survive today. And then everything else in this season is gravy because this is the day she got voted out. And then to be able to say, I want immunity on my previous vote out day. Like we got a lot of that this season with AU, with Simon, but now we have Tiffany this season, just being able to celebrate that she did make it further in a crazier game, because it's also now so many more vote outs that she's had to deal with, though I haven't counted, but I'm just guessing so many more vote outs or tribal councils that she's had to go through. But I don't know
she finished ninth, right?
Yeah,
so it's actually like, yes, it's more vote outs because there are 24 people instead of 18.
She's gone to the more tribal, the same amount of tribal councils,
probably not because she was on the disaster tribe that season.
That's true. We should see how many tribal councils.
Oh, McKenna died. McKenna's back at some point, hopefully. But this is one of those important press of things with Tiffany. And actually, as this happened, as Tiffany won this immunity, I actually said, man, I really wish that Tiffany had a bigger edit in those first few episodes, because this is the type of episode that would have really boosted her winner potential, I think. Not, it's like just from an edit perspective, right? If Tiffany had confessionals in those first three episodes, at this point, I would be like, ah, yes, Tiffany could potentially win this season still. But because she didn't have those, I'm like, okay, never mind. But
you get your podcast on mobile, then you get a phone call and it shuts down the entire phone.
Now we've learned. But it's just, I was just commenting on the fact that I really wish Tiffany had more confessionals early on in the season, because this moment here would have really been one of those, oh my god, Tiffany's gonna win this game type of like moments.
What's crazy, when we were thinking back to moments where they talk about their vote out doomsday, it's actually people that get voted out again on their vote out day, where Caleb has a little bit of an asterisk because he wasn't voted out, he was medevaced. But he was then voted out of Game Changers the same day he was medevaced out of Ko Rong. And, like, what are the odds?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where I can't imagine what it would be like going back into a game and facing that day. Like, especially for Caleb, who arguably had the worst day of his life that day.
Almost died.
And getting to that point again in the game and be like, yeah, okay, this is, like, there's a type of lethargy to it. There is a type of catharsis to it. Mm-hmm. It's this moment where you're facing this truth about you. And it's like, oh my God, I was able to do it again. And then just to get voted out, like, oh my God, that had to be brutal.
The odds of him getting swapped with three Ko Rong members, that he had to go to tribal council that day. Like, there was a lot to go wrong for Caleb to have him be voted out again on the same day.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate. And I mean, I think we've seen it. I mean, obviously the people who like are voted out the same day, like one of the most iconic ones is Francesca, right? And we see it with Francesca where, yes, they ultimately do it and she has to eat a rock, but there is that moment in people where it's like, oh, we can't do this to her again. And granted, that is a first boot situation, so it's a little bit different than Caleb. But I imagine some of this conversation had to be like, we can't vote Caleb out today of all days.
Yeah, and like there are people that have a heart in Survivor, but at the same time, it's Survivor, so you got to do what you got to do. I feel like they could have let Francesca slide. Like, Francesca probably is one of those biggest, like, I better not get voted out here. This is my point. You know, we see Bruce survive his doomsday too, and is like, all right, let's go. I'm now a new player, which is crazy. So like Tiffany here survived day 19, and now she's in new territory where some people have made it to Final Tribal Council and are like, I know the ropes.
There's a conversation in the chat happening now about how Tiffany should have played more aggressively. And admittedly so, we do know that like there was some cutout from like the original Kalo tribe. That was the first tribe she was on, right? The Kalo tribe? That was the blue tribe this season?
Yes. Yeah.
The Kalo tribe, just because like they weren't going to tribal councils, there wasn't a lot of like gameplay going on there. Like, because Chrissy did say that like Tiffany was doing things on that beach, but it's cut out of the edit because it was inconsequential in the end. I wonder if Tiffany was playing a little bit more conservative come the merge, just to make sure that she got to this point in the game.
Yeah, I mean, that is a possibility, but also I think there are some things that, like, if they aligned with Suri, great. If they didn't align with Suri, then Suri was just going to get what she wanted. Some of these conversations, it feels like Tiffany puts up something and then it's just like, we'll consider it, or that's the plan for right now. And then everything hits the fan.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes moving forward. And I think like the other person we want to mention who faced their doomsday and unfortunately made the unforced error and was voted out is Sandra.
Sandra. to have to get voted out on the day you have been voted out before, especially as a winner, not being voted out. Like, I don't know what was going through her head of like, oh, I'm voted out on the same day. I either get voted out on the same day or never.
Yeah, right. It's one of those things where it's like, if I get past day 16, I'm winning the game. I imagine that was going through her head in Winners at War. It's tough. I already mentioned how tough it must be as like a returning player coming back. I don't know what it would be like to have played the game and won it twice, come back, and then you're like petrified of day 16 because it's the day that you went home. That third time you played the game where you arguably played your best game.
That also is like one of those moments of like, so you have so much paranoia on your vote out day where you could make stupid decisions, where like Devin's was saying, I don't want to make angry decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make calm decisions. And if you're on your vote out day, you could make paranoid decisions to get you know, that next day. But is that next day worth it when you have this, that, and that, this going wrong?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is part of the reason why we see Sandra be a little desperate in this vote and make this agreement with Denise, right? The agreement to, okay, I'll take one fire token now, one fire token afterwards, and then, you know, here's the idol, save yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it obviously sinks her game. She goes home here. I think this was, that agreement is just, it's still one of the worst agreements I've ever seen on Survivor. Like, just take both of them. You have to incentivize her not to vote you out.
Well, this has been our very rough, janky podcast. Hopefully next week I will actually be here. It does get a little bit better over on Patreon. I only glitch out once. So stay tuned, become a patron, and listen to us talk about episode 12, Russell Feathers, season 27, Blood versus Water, over there tomorrow. John, what do we got going on in the Specialist Universe?
Oh, well, first, thanks everyone for tuning in. Make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel so you know when we're going live. Phil and Will broke down the episode on Wednesday. Phil and Blake were joined by Stephen Ram this week to dig a little deeper into the episode. That was a really fun podcast, so make sure you check that out. Phil is being joined. Who's Phil being joined by for the power rankings?
Saul?
What did you just say?
Saul? Question mark?
I don't know.
I think it's Saul.
Saul. Yes, it is Saul. You're right. That is definitely who it is. It is Saul. Saul. I don't know if he's going to have a vest on or not, but you never know. and then he is being joined by Kyle Durrett. Our good friend Kyle Durrett from the Matt Chat will be joining him for the predictions on Tuesday. So make sure you tune in for that. And then, you know, next week we'll be right back here to rewind whatever craziness happens. I'm so happy I'm at a point now in Survivor 50 where I don't know what's going to happen next week.
Yes.
Well, I know there's no more celebrities. So
we do know that time is ticking to the finale.
Yeah, we're almost there. We got to eliminate at least three people before then. So,
yeah, it's going to be a huge finale. It's going to be 5 hours and we're going to be sitting there the entire time when they could have had like a few extra weeks of episodes.
It's okay. It's all worth it. It's Survivor. We're not actually going to complain.
No. But that's it, John. I can't end the podcast.
You have to podcast. You are on there. But thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We will see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.